If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or home computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hey there, artists, musicians, and busy creative professionals. How would you like to outsource your nagging to-do list? You should call Vicky at My Virtual Gal, virtual assistants to handle those things keeping you from your craft, booking appointments, managing emails, tallying numbers, or editing your business blog. My Virtual Gal can handle it all, short-term or long, daily, weekly, or monthly. Check out myvirtualgal.com to book your free discovery call and explore the possibilities. You'll be amazed how productive you'll feel with a right-hand gal, My Virtual Gal. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Leah Callahan joins us today for an interview. Leah has played in some pretty cool bands over the years, including Turkish Delight, Betwixt, The Glass Set, and now she's releasing her second solo record that she just finished making at Galaxy Park in Salem, Mass. With Richard Marr. In our interview, we talk about the new record and her long, storied music career. Okay, we'll have that interview for you shortly, but first I want to just tell you a little story, like I usually do. Last week I went to an art gallery opening, which normally wouldn't be that unusual, but seeing that I haven't been to any kind of a show in over a year, it was really different. My friend Sibylline Seriano, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, opened her gallery in the south end of Boston at 460 Harrison Street. It was a light crowd. Dude, the matinee was anyways. I was at the matinee show. I don't know about the night, but I'm sure it was still light due to the COVID restrictions. But nevertheless, it was fun to be out. The violin cat, Catherine Scudera Haddad, who describes herself as an eclectic freelance violinist, played beautifully. It was a really cool idea having a live act play while people were looking at the art. And it felt so good seeing art and hearing live music. It was the first time I'd heard live music since like last January 2020. It was living proof that if everyone works together, we can get through this horrible period and just start doing things somewhat normal again. And by the way, this is a great opportunity for me to tell you about a new podcast that I'm going to be doing with my friend Sibylline called Seems to Me with Sibylline Seriano and Steve Ricardo, where we'll be talking about fashion, film, food, music. We recorded our first show this week, and it should be out soon. So stay tuned for that. I'm not trying to get you not to listen to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico, but I'm letting you know that there is another podcast coming. Before we play you the interview with Leah Callahan, here's a track from her new album entitled Simple Folk. This one's called I Don't Relate.
I don't relate. Never did. We'll be right back.
All right. Please welcome to the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast, Leah Callahan. How are you, Leah?
I'm great. It's so nice to hear your voice again. It's been a long time, and thanks so much for having me.
I'm really happy that you're on the show. When I heard you had a new record coming out, I was like very excited. And then when I heard it, I became even more excited by it.
Great news. I'm so glad you like it.
I've always been a fan of yours, not just because you have a great voice, because you have a great stage presence and you have tremendous, not to use a word that is not a very popular word, style and fashion. I've always thought you were really fashionable and everything. And I think that kind of goes along with it. And a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from my own insecurities, to be honest. I never really felt like I fit in for a lot of reasons.
Wow.
You know, especially just starting out. I never felt like I had the right look or the right... I didn't feel like I was cool enough or whatever. So I think I was always freaking out about what I wore. So maybe I just ended up putting more into it. I was always wearing something different. I never felt like I looked just right. I never quite felt like I fit in or I was cool enough or rich enough or any enough. So.
Well, I thought the complete opposite.
Because
thank you. I always thought that you looked awesome on stage. So I wanted to ask you, how have you been doing during these challenging times during the last year with all the chaos and everything?
Yeah, well, I have a weird answer for you. I actually have been doing kind of the same. I was Googling around the other day, and there was actually a study in Scandinavia that says that about 20% of people surveyed actually were doing better off during COVID. And I don't mean financially, but just psychologically. And they didn't have a ton of information about it, but they said they think maybe those people are just resilient. And that kind of struck a chord with me. Through thick and thin, I've always just been kind of resilient. And I think for many reasons, COVID hasn't affected me negatively like it has some other folks, maybe because they have kids or they're the industry that they're in. It hasn't really affected me in a huge way. I don't have a ton of roommates. I'm also not isolated and alone. So, you know, it really hasn't affected me. There were 2 months where I couldn't go out and I was really, really cranky.
Yeah, the beginning.
To my significant other. But other than that, it's actually been a benefit for me because, for example, the collaborators on my second solo album and now my upcoming new solo album coming up this fall, Alex Stern and Alex Brander, they're typically on tour. They're touring musicians.
Right.
So they were available for me for the first time, and it was just amazing. So having things actually benefited me during COVID, I wouldn't say like I wrote more songs or anything, because being at home and kind of being out of a regular pattern and never really being alone. Mm-hmm. I like to be alone when I'm writing songs. So I wouldn't say I was more creative in any way. It was just that opportunity to work with someone I wouldn't normally have worked with, I guess.
You know,
and I guess I had a little more time to like promote the album and stuff, but I didn't do any particularly more songwriting or anything.
You know, I agree with you. The first couple of months were really, really challenging. I live alone now, so that's what made it kind of challenging.
Aww.
But aside from going out to eat, which I like to do, and not being able to record my show for a few months, I tried doing it at home on my MacBook, but it just doesn't sound the same, not doing it with really nice mics and stuff. Other than that, I kind of agree with you. I actually feel like I did get a lot done during that time, and since things have opened up a little and I've been able to get back in the studio, it's been like much better. So I do understand. I do get that survey or that poll or whatever it was. It kind of makes sense for some people. Can we go all the way back to the beginning? And would you mind telling our listeners how you got started in music and how that led up to Turkish Delight, which was a quite popular band in the early 90s. I don't know if that was your first band, but I think it was. Maybe you can tell us how you got started and how you ended up in that band.
Sure. Well, when I was about 3 or 4 years old, my grandmother paid for me, I think it was $3 a lesson or something, to get singing and piano lessons, I think, at first. And I had no discipline. I can't even play piano today, but I loved it. And I actually started doing singing lessons a few years later. Again, very inexpensive. I had a retired teacher who was in her 70s, and I'm like this little girl. And I just loved the relationship I had with the singing teacher and the piano teacher who were, you know, in their 70s. For me, it was fun. I had this like kind of fantasy world where I was going to become an opera singer. And, you know, everyone around me was like, you need to really get a real job. So that kind of didn't really happen. Became estranged from my family. I got really involved in like ideas about like social justice in college and politics. And so my focus was really on that. That kind of all went to hell.
did you actually get a college degree?
I did.
Where did you go to school?
I have no idea how. I think part of it was the teachers were amazing. Like I had a couple TAs. I suffered from depression among other things, and I had a few TAs. I mean, they saw that I was a smart person, so they literally were like calling me on the phone. They were like, "Leah, get your last paper in." I mean, it was amazing. Like the sort of care that I had around me.
Would you mind saying where you went to college?
No, of course not. UMass Amherst.
Oh, ZUMass.
Oh, yeah, it was ZUMass when I went there. Actually, I liked it because they had a lot of political things going on. They were always taking over buildings and things, and I jumped in and did that.
But fun.
I will say, I did want to go to Berklee College of Music, but it was extremely expensive.
Yeah.
It was, you know, six figures or something, and UMass was like three figures. Seriously, I'm not exaggerating. And I did apply for a scholarship. I've had arguments with people who say, oh, you can get a scholarship. You can get a scholarship to Harvard. The thing about getting a scholarship is you kind of have to have, like, financially and other ways, have a secure background mm-hmm. to be able to get to take those steps, to get those things. But anyway, I won't start talking about class, social justice. But the thing about Berklee is, yeah, I think they were going to maybe give me $1,000. And it didn't quite make that dent
right.
in that six-figure. So then I thought about, well, maybe I could probably scrape some money together, but then I was living in Boston, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up at UMass Amherst. Yeah, and I liked it. Didn't do anything to do with music. So when I came, ended up in the Boston area and just fell in with some friends who were all involved with the arts. And Church of Light actually had a different first lead singer, but it didn't really work out for any of them. And I kind of ended up just because of my friends, you know, we're like, yeah, let's just do a band. We were going to the Middle East like two or three times a week anyway to go see bands. So we're like, you know, we'll get in free at the Middle East and we'll get dinner. And then they would give you dinner.
Right. Yeah, I remember
and
that.
I mean, people, yeah, with a combination of knowing the door people and WZBC free tickets, I never paid for anything. It was pretty cool. So that's basically how Church of Light started.
Wow. So I heard and I saw that Turkish Delight, two albums have been re-released in one package and they're now available on Bandcamp. That's pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah, it was very cool. About 3 years ago, we got an email. Carl, the bass player, is still kind of doing bands, or he took a break. Now he's still doing music in the Boston area, or was before COVID. And a kid from the iHeart Noise label got in touch with him and was like, would you mind if we reissued you on
wow.
cassette? And we're like, would we mind? Because there's this huge subculture of cassette. So they reissued the first one. We're a little bit slow, but it prompted us to do a reunion. We did a reunion from Boston, and then they reissued our second one. And then the people from iHeart Noise, Ilya is amazing on social media. He was just like a powerhouse on Twitter. He sold all the cassettes and he really got out some momentum. He's still promoting Turkish Delight to this day. And that's how the small label in the UK, Reckless Yes, got in touch. We actually had many opportunities to tour the UK, to play. We had shows offered to us. It was just a really huge expense and we just couldn't get it together. But yeah, we did have this wonderful reissue and we have a great relationship with them. So.
I wasn't living in the Boston area in the early 90s. I was out in California and New York, but I remember hearing about Turkish Delight all the time.
Yeah.
You guys had a really good buzz
midnight.
Going.
It was midnight. It was like 93 to 96, I think.
Right,
96, 97.
Yeah. I think 94 was when you put the first record out, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, there was a good buzz on the band. You guys were like, you had a really good combination of like, it was like, I don't know if you'd call it shoegaze, but you know, you guys had like, were noisy and artsy. And one thing that another thing I found online, which blew me away, is there's a live album you can get on Bandcamp.
Yep.
And you're doing a cover of Black Sabbath, Fairies Wear Boots. Oh my God,
yep.
That is so cool. When
so
I heard
fun.
That, I was like, were you a Black Sabbath fan? Was it your idea, or did those guys say, we're doing a Black Sabbath song?
I liked Black Sabbath a lot, and I think at the time, the bass player, Carl, he had somewhat of a metal background way back. You know, he was in a heavy metal band at one point. I guess it just came out, we're like, that's a crazy idea for a noise band, because we really didn't do covers.
Right.
We were a lot like self-taught. We couldn't like come out. Someone came out and said, do a cover. We're like, no. We invented our own instruments. It was really experimental. So, yeah, but we managed to whip out Strays Wear Boots, and it was a lot of fun. And I think a lot of that was me as a young woman, like really wanting, now it doesn't seem like a big deal, but back then it was like, I want to do this like very macho, like, you know, swinging the microphone around and be like a dude and do the song. And that was kind of fun. You know,
well, you pulled it off. You definitely pulled it off. I wish there was video footage of that somewhere. I would love to have seen a video of it, but the recording is just fantastic. You guys nailed it.
Thank you. Yeah, we worked hard, so.
Yeah, so if anyone out there wants to hear that, you can find it on Bandcamp along with the other two records, which are all listed as one album now, which is very cool. The band that I actually got to see more that you were in was Betwixt, which became kind of a darling of the Boston music scene, so to speak. How did that whole band come together for you?
Sure. Turkish Delight was really tough, really hard to end for me. I didn't want it to end. And we had such a weird, it wasn't one of those bands where you could just say, replace the drummer, replace the bass player, or certainly, you know, replace the singer, guitarist. You really couldn't replace any of us. We had our own weird chemistry. So when it broke up, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with myself? Because my whole identity was in my unpaid music career.
Right.
And so what happened was, actually, I really lucked out in so many ways. There was a kid down in, I think, Pennsylvania, about 18, and he was writing letters to Turkish Delight that he wanted to join the band. We also had a fan, Tom Devaney, who had been in Bulkhead.
Tom,
at the time,
yes.
I think, was in Boxing. We played with him a bunch. And now you say Turkish Delight's popular, but we had a lot of people who hated our guts. We were just weird and out there, and people were like, these guys need to learn how to play their instruments, and they need to go back to music school. And I could have said, if I was able to respond back then, is that we couldn't have afforded music school. But anyway, so there was a lot of detractors. But Tom, I think he was kind of in the real... I won't say mainstream, but he was kind of in the old guard of Boston, you know, kind of the indie rock scene of Boston. He knew a lot of people. The band had done quite well. They'd been signed. And so he was a fan. And I think, and actually he heard about the band because a guy was criticizing us and said we were all over the place. And so that actually intrigued him. So Tom was a huge fan. And then I said to Tom, let's start a band. I don't remember exactly how it happened. I probably wanted to date him or something. And so we started getting together. And then I was like, well, I have this guy, Gordon, who wants to join maybe. And he was like 18 years old. I don't think so. And I'm like, no, you got to meet him. And so that's kind of how it started. And we had rotating drummers. We had amazingly talented drummers. The problem is they often would get taken away on tour. We were touring with national acts. But Dave Nelson came back for a little while and played with me. He was a drummer for quite some time, and he actually still plays with us now when we get back together and do things, which we've been doing on occasion, just virtually. So yeah, that's how that band started. It was two fans, really liked both, really liked Tom and Gordon. We had a great chemistry, a great connection, and the music was just, there was no preconceived, of course, Gordon knew how to play cello.
Yeah, the cello was great.
It was just kind of really different. Yeah, there was no preconceived notion of what we were going to sound like. And at the time, that worked really well for me. And it was very similar in the way that I did Turkish Delight. It was a very egalitarian kind of band, democratic. We all came in with ideas, very similar to Turkish Delight, actually. The sound was very different, but everything else was very similar.
I had just moved to Boston and started up my management company, and I put some compilations out, and I actually called Tom up, and I said, Tom, can I get a Betwixt song for my compilation? And I said, you could give me anything you want. So he gives me the Lee Hazelwood, Nancy Sinatra cover of Sundown, Sundown, and that blew me away because I love that song. Oh. And when I heard your version, your version of it is fantastic. So I loved it. It was on the compilation, and it got me to listen to the old version of the song again because I was like,
Oh, wow.
I'm like, no one ever talks about how great that song is. And how did you guys come to do that? Was that Tom's idea or was it your idea?
It was definitely Tom's idea. Tom has this, like, kind of some, like, Trips to Light. Everybody in that band had crazy amounts of musical knowledge, especially, like, obscure music. Dave Nelson and Carl had been both college radio DJs. I was, but I wasn't a very good one. But, so Tom had, like, crazy amounts of musical knowledge. I think he might have been a DJ, but he was definitely, you know, like a huge, I mean, he knows all these obscure bands mm-hmm. and can, like, give you details and all these things. So that was his idea 100%, I believe.
Yeah, I think Tom and I connected because we're both, you know, very nerdy about music, you know. And, you know, when he gave me that cover, I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I mean, I noticed, too, by the way, when I was scouring the internet in the last couple of weeks, like I like to do before I have a guest on, that Betwixt reunited and you guys did some live stuff on YouTube. And I watched it and you did a Cars cover, which was really cool.
Yeah,
Was that the first time you played with those guys since the late 90s?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about Trips to Light and Betwixt is actually, I don't think any of my bands, none of us, like, hate each other.
That's just good. Didn't
really just have to play together. I quit pretty cold turkey for a good 13 or 14 years or more. So Tom reissued the second album because I feel like we just didn't get the promotion. We kind of broke up, very similar to Trips to Light. After our second album, we broke up, so it didn't really get out there as much as we would have liked. So Tom reissued it on vinyl, you know, spent his blood, sweat, and tears on that. So he's like, let's do some virtual. We had some shows planned in Boston and New York and D.C., but obviously those didn't happen. So we started thinking about, let's just do some virtual shows. So, yeah, the Cars cover was very well received, and we did one original. We're actually going to work on another original shortly. Everyone's super busy. I think two of the guys have kids now. You know, everybody has full-time jobs, and we're all over the place. Canada, I forget where Gordon is. He's not in Boston, though. He might be. I don't think he's in Boston. So we're all over the place.
Well,
in New York,
if we were on a Zoom call, you would have noticed that my mouth was wide open when you said it's on vinyl. I have to get a copy of that. I didn't realize.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Wow.
Absolutely beautiful.
I'm going to get a copy because I love vinyl, and I think it's fantastic that you guys reissued it on vinyl. I got to hear
that. Dave Nelson kind of did a little bit of a redesign. He took a cool old photo that we've gotten of the band on the back. It looks really nice. It sounds really good, too.
Wow. So, you know, those were two really cool bands, and then you took a break, and next up was the Glass Set, which was more of kind of a dreamy.
I actually did not take a break. I actually was crazy. I kept going. They called
you
me
did?
The hardest working showbiz at one point in Boston. I did a theater
sorry.
company. Yeah, I did a theater company for a while.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking about releasing records when I said that because there was a little bit of a...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, we did the theater company, and then I did a solo thing in 2003.
Right, your first solo record, yes.
Yeah.
The Glass Set you went to. Oh, so did you go to Richard Marr before the Glass Set and start working with him then?
No. So after Betwixt broke up, I think around 2000, I was in a band called Butterfield 8 very briefly, but the other guys were in other bands, so they were super busy. That was fun. I had some great photos, though, because I was in a band with a girl for the first time, so we had a lot of fun dressing up in our rock outfits and stuff. That was a lot of fun. But, so I was in the band, and then, I mean, the minute that ended, I moved on to, like, the theater company, the solo thing. Then I had my own label. That crashed and burned. I was pretty miserable. So I was pretty much ready to give up music again and literally ran into Richard Marr, who I hadn't seen since the early mid-90s, the early 90s probably. And a guy from the Fly Seville was either at Richard's party or living with Richard and introduced me back to Richard. And then Richard sucked me back in, got together a band for the Glass Set, because I didn't have a band at that point. And that's how the Glass Set started, was Richard.
Oh, I didn't know that. That must have been at the Greenhouse in Alston that happened.
Exactly. Yeah. I walked by the Greenhouse one day. I think I had thought about leaving Boston. I thought about not doing music anymore. Maybe I wasn't doing music anymore. I forget. But yeah, Richard stuck me. I don't even know how it came about, but he's always been a fan of my music, and he calls me the real deal, whatever that means. So yeah, we started hanging around and became good friends again. And he totally got me an in-house studio band for the first Glass Set album, which morphed into an actual band for the next two. So that's how that happened.
Well, I got a quote here from Richard. I'm going to read you. But before I read you this quote, it's really funny that before we started recording, I was telling you that coffee shop that we met at one time in Davis is gone. Well, guess what? The Greenhouse has been demolished and it's gone. And there's huge condos there now. So it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Sad.
Boston's becoming a condo, I think.
I actually managed Richard's band, Flexi, and so Richard and we go way back, so I spent a lot of time at the Greenhouse. A few bands on my old label, Red Car Records, actually recorded there, so very familiar with that place. I reached out to Richard when I told him you were coming on the show, and I asked him about working with you, and he actually gave me a quote, which I want to share with everyone right now. Quote.
I got a big smile on my face right now. I can't wait.
Oh, it's a good one. It's a good one. Working with Lear is effortless. Every take is awesome, and she can sing all day. Her ears are amazing. She is super intuitive, which makes communication for us very easy. She paints pictures with her words. That's a pretty nice quote from Richard Marr, Galaxy Park.
That's amazing. Richard is never usually talks that much either. So.
Oh, well, so cool. Yeah, I know. I had him on my show, and he was. It was hard to get much of a reaction out of him. But that was one of my really early shows when I moved back to Boston, and I recorded four episodes up at Galaxy Park with him. So I said, if I'm going to record here, Richard, you're going to have to be a guest on the show. We've talked about you many times because when I got the Glass Set record, I immediately noticed his name on it. And I was like, wow, you worked at Lea Callahan? Because, I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound all goo-goo, but I've been a fan of yours for a long time, just like Richard. You have fans out there, Lea. But
Richard should just be on the cover of those albums because he literally brought everything together. He did.
So you recorded, this was the third time you actually recorded with him.
Let me think. Fourth, because there was a first Glass Set album, which was kind of a solo album. It's a long story. It was a rock opera. That's how I think I came to Richard, because I'd morphed from doing a musical to a rock opera. I had this rock opera idea. Richard got the band together. It was Eric and Andy from Codetta.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, very songwriters and incredible, talk about intuitive. Andy was able to sit down with me and just write from my vocal and stuff. So, that was that one. And then there were two Glass Set albums, three albums. So this is the fourth album with her.
Wow, you guys have good history together. Four records with the same engineer producer. That's pretty cool. So you must really feel the same way about him that he feels about you, right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, he saved my life in so many ways. And I feel like I plan on putting out many more, and they will all be with Richard.
Wow, that's very complimentary towards him. I've worked with Richard a lot, too. So it's funny, different engineers and producers have different styles. Did you work with Minahan, too?
Yeah, we had the opportunity to work with Dave Minahan on the Detrift album. And I don't remember how that came about. Probably Tom's connection, but Dave Minahan is awesome.
Yeah, I thought so. That's good that you've worked with guys that are actually musicians. So that's really cool. I always find that, Nick Z, who I'm doing this show with here, my engineer, he's a drummer, So I like working with people that understand, how to actually play the instruments, too. And just don't rely on their ear. No offense against the Rick Rubens of the world, but it's kind of cool for other musicians. They feel comfortable that way. And I can tell you, go ahead.
Sorry, my first recording experience was with Eric Mastinago from the Dam Builders.
Oh yeah, right. Wow. Yeah, you've made the rounds with the great engineers around here. So this new album is called Simple Folk, and the songs are all pretty deep. And I have to ask you, are these like personal stories you're sharing? Because I played I Don't Relate before you came on, and then the song 1997 again and Borrow Time, they seem to come across that way to me. Are these from are these personal songs? Like, do you write out of a feeling or do you write out of force? How did you write these songs?
Yeah, sure. I started kind of writing fall of, I think it was like 2019, give or take, and I was coming up with my ideas, and also I'd had ideas to write a book, which kind of didn't work out, but that was right 2018. I started writing some Medium posts just on like ideas and life experiences. So I had this great, I had this like, it was a 100-page unfinished book, like semi-autobiographical, that I just took all the more interesting stories or ideas, beliefs, or feelings, and the ones that kind of came across. There are a few that just got on the chopping block. There's one, like, vaguely about date rape that ended up on the chopping block for whatever reason. And there's actually no particular reason. Like, I might have had the idea, and actually I had a different collaborator, and then I was trying to work with that person, and then I sent some over to Richard. And a few ended up on the chopping block. There's really no rhyme or reason. I think Richard wanted to have 10 songs, so we ended up with 10. These are all stories from my, they're all two stories from my life, and kind of like, so yeah, feelings I've had and just trying to get it all out there. And I do think they're different. I do think I offer a different perspective because you don't see a lot of stories like that for whatever reason.
Yeah, I wish I had a lyric sheet to go along with these songs because there are some really intense.
There is on Bandcamp, and I'll send you a lyric sheet too. But if you go to Bandcamp and click next to, there's actually, all the lyrics are there.
I don't know why I didn't click on the lyrics because I always do that.
It's not really obvious.
Well,
you
know,
hover over it.
You're not real. Your singing is not really that hard to. It's really easy to understand. So I picked up a lot of things, you know, from what you were saying. Like, you know, the songs that I mentioned, especially like 1997 again. I almost feel like you're talking about past band experience, past relationships, past living. You seem to cover all the bases.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's other stories that didn't get in there. Maybe there's other stories that are coming out of my next album. But 1997, again, is funny because I'm like, it's about me being really young. My boyfriend dumped me. My band dumped me. And it was a crazy time. And you think about when you're in your, like, early 20s and you're running around. And I got on a bus because I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to Providence, get holy shit-faced, and hook up with my ex-boyfriend. Hopefully there's a party. When I mean hook up, I mean just, like, hang out. That's exactly what it was. I had a friend who went to art school at RISD, ex-date guy that I dated, and he went to RISD, and I'm like, it's New Year's Eve, there's no way I want to be in Boston. You know, my band just dumped me, my boyfriend just dumped me. I'm going to go drink heavily and party at RISD. That sounds fun. So I get there, he has like, this guy has like no plans. I think he wanted maybe to date me again. I'm not really sure. All I know is it wasn't fun.
Well,
so that's like, it's about this kind of chaotic time when you're young and you're like, oh my God, my life is going to hell. And so I'll get on a bus and get drunk and go to a party, but the party never happened. So that's basically what the song is about, you know?
I really love your brutal honesty. I had a feeling that you would give me honest answers about those songs because I could.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy to tell that they're from personal experiences. You mentioned earlier you worked with the guys from the Stearns, Alex Stern, and the singer from the Stearns. He does a duet with you, actually, on the record.
Yeah.
And did you work with them before or did Richard just recommend them when you went up to the studio?
Yeah, no, I hadn't worked with them before because Alex Stern was always on tour with bands.
Right.
And I was a fan of their band. I met them, I think, through Richard, and Chris, the singer from the Sterns, was a huge fan of the Black Set. So the Black Set played with the Sterns, which is an amazing show, and it was really nice to have their support. And actually, the Sterns did a cover of one of the Black Set songs live one time.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And Chris had me do backup on one of their songs. So when I wrote Throwaway, it's like a love song, but I feel like when you write a love song like a brokenhearted song, you have to, I know, I guess I have to remember that I'm not the only person that gets my heart broken. I've broken other people's hearts. So I thought about like that song, Someone I used to know. Like I thought it would be really cool to have like a vocal of another perspective of them, you know, kind of saying to me, I'm a jerk, and like I broke their heart. So that was really cool. I thought about Chris's voice, and it just worked out perfectly to have him sing on that. It was actually really cool for me to hear someone else sing one of my songs. That was a really cool experience. So Richard said, got me hooked up with Alex Stern and Alex Brander. They both tour with Big D and the Kids Table, among other things.
Right.
But I'm not the only person they've worked with. They've worked with something like, don't quote me on this, but I think they've done like 30 some odd, maybe more projects with Richard. They're like an in-house studio band, so in so many words. So, you know, that was not that unusual for them to do that. So they.
Yeah, Richard has his in-house musician staff going on up there in Salem, which is really cool. It's funny because when I heard your record, I usually play maybe one song, sometimes two, but I'm playing two on this show. But I couldn't really decide what two. I ended up with I Don't Relate, and I'm going to play Blameless after the interview. Throwaway was high on my list, though, because that song is a fantastic duet. When I heard that, I think it's really smart that you did that as a duet. It came out really good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a really sad song, but yeah, it was cool to have a different perspective on it.
I
love Blameless. I'm so glad you played that because that's one of my favorite songs, and I don't think it's gotten much attention for whatever reason.
Well, I have to ask you about Blameless because even though we haven't played it yet, it'll come on later. People will hear this. It's an interesting song because you sing in a really mellow way with mellow music at the beginning, and then all of a sudden it rocks out in the middle to the end, but you don't come back and sing. And I was like, that's an interesting concept. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was all Alex as far as the concept. You know, originally this album was going to be kind of like very similar to my 2003 album, more sparse and maybe a little more folk. But working with Richard, he kind of put his foot down. That's not really his thing. So Alex came up with what I would say almost a more cabaret, like folk beginning for that song. He really kept the vocals at the forefront. I think he does that for every song. But so when I first heard it, I was like, what the heck? Because, yeah, it kind of ends, the actual song, and then it breaks into this really happy, like, indie rock.
Upbeat, very upbeat,
Yeah, and I love it because my songs are really super depressing and dark and... And I think he kind of lifts Alex's music, like lifts them out of that horrible darkness. And I'm not horrible and dark all the time. And I love the fact that there's a balance that, there's some horrible things, but I love that there's that optimistic end to that song. And yeah, it's not a formulaic song, first chorus, verse, musical part. And that's fine with me. I love it. And I like what he did, and I wouldn't have changed it for the world. So yeah, it was just, I don't know what the rhyme or reason he had to do that, but I was all for it. I have nobody, you know, paying for my recording telling me what to do, so I can do whatever the heck I want. So I love that. Actually, Richard, I think, was even a little surprised and thought about making it into two songs, and I put my foot down and said no. And it was going to be, actually, at first I thought maybe we'll have it at the beginning of the album, because like I said, it starts out kind of folk and then breaks into a rock song. I thought it'd be a funny beginning of the album, being like, surprise, this is what the album is, not what you expected. But anyway, it works out really well where it is.
Well, the methodology behind it worked for me, because when I heard it, it was cabaret. That's a great way to describe the beginning.
Yeah.
But then when it gets into the rock part, it's like, I was like, holy shit, this fucking song rocks, man. I mean, it really, like, I love it. That's why I'm playing it on the show, because it just blew me away. But not that the other ones did it, because I like all of them. I just want to ask you one more thing. Once we get through this, the pandemic and the mess and everything that's going on, and things start getting close to normal, do you have any plans to play out at all?
Playing out is a lot of, it's really hard, all the politics around it, but I think so, because I'm going to have another album in September, and I think there's going to be a lot of strong material, you know, certainly to play out with these two. So yeah, I plan on it. I plan on doing like a CD release party probably. I'd like to do like the Flower and Stars, like more a more fun
intimate,
kind of party atmosphere, like the scary, like dark club, cavernous feeling. It's always a struggle. I mean, I kind of fought the struggle booking the Turkish Delight shows. I kind of went back into that. And the older I get, like the less patience I have with people. So yeah, as long as it's as low-key as possible, like as far as me booking the show, I have some relationships with booking agents and stuff. So again, that's what stresses me out the most. But the actual playing out, yeah, I'd definitely be up for it, especially if I feel like that there's an audience for it. You know, it's not like the old days where you could build up an audience.
It's not.
You really can't.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I really need to get the music to build up an audience a little bit and then play out and see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, I was prepared for you to say anything with that question because I think, you know, your studio projects are fantastic and you don't really even need to play out. But if you do play out, I think that would be good as well because you always had such a really good stage presence. And you're a real artist, Leah Callahan, and that's what I like about you. Saying that you started writing a book and all this stuff, that doesn't surprise me at all. So I want to just say I wish you the very best for whatever you do. I'm a fan of your music, I will say that. I've liked all your bands and all your projects, and I hope you keep making music.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.
My pleasure. And, you know, I'm sure we'll be talking soon, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, same here. Thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of COVID.
You're funny. You're dark. You are dark. All right. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much.
We can't all be winners. If we are, then who's the loser? We can't all be singers, 'cause then who'd be the listeners? We can't. Then who'd be the liars? We can't all be quiet, 'cause then who'd make a sound? We can't all be lovers, because then who'd be the sad ones? We can't all be happy, 'cause then who'd be the mad ones? I've looked at this world and I mostly find it lacking, but still here I make noise, still here I'm living. We can't all be winners, if we are then who's a loser? We can't all be blameless, if we are then who's to blame? We'll be right back.
If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or home computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. All right, that was cool. I mean, I've always thought that Leah Callahan is like just totally cool, and I was like serious about her stage presence, her voice, her sense of style and fashion, the whole nine yards. I've always thought she was one of the coolest artists to come out of the Boston music scene, and really happy to have her on the show, and looking forward to seeing what she does in the future, without a doubt. I just wanted to mention a couple more things here. This episode is brought to you by Baby Loves Tacos, and their two outstanding locations in the Pittsburgh area, the original hotspot in Bloomfield and their second location in Millvale, right over the 40th Street Bridge. And check this out. We just heard that there's a third location opening up soon in Oakland area of Pittsburgh. If you know the city, it's right near the University of Pittsburgh. There's going to be a lot of happy college kids when Baby Loves Tacos opens up in their neighborhood. So be on the lookout for that. Baby Loves Tacos, where everybody eats. I want to mention another location, another mom and pop. You know, while we were going through the dark days of the pandemic in that unforgettable time called 2020, we were constantly reminding you to support small businesses and mom and pops and record stores and studios like this one here at New Alliance East in Somerville. And let me just tell you, these stores and these businesses, they still need your help because some states are not fully opened yet. I don't understand how any can be, but I guess some are. But this state that I record in and live in, Massachusetts, is not open. So I wanted to mention one store that I visited yesterday. It's called Isidore's Organics. They're right outside of Oxford. I stopped in there yesterday to get one of their fantastic freshly made blueberry smoothies. And I was talking to my friend Justin, who owns the place. He was actually he's also a musician. He's been running that place for 15 years, and it's been a struggle for them to stay open, but he's still there. And many days, he told me, he worked all alone, and he did whatever he could. And you know what else is really cool about Isidore's, which you can walk into now and order food to go? They have a turntable playing, spinning vinyl. Like, how cool is that? I mean, I know Justin's favorite band is Sunvolt. So when you go in there, you can probably hear a lot of alt country music. But it's places like Isidore's and Baby Loves Tacos and My Virtual Gal, and they really need your support now more than ever. So, I mean, it's like, I haven't been mentioning this lately, but I just want you to know it's still on my mind that we need to support these small businesses, these recording studios, these record stores like Record Archive in Rochester, New York, like the Heavy Metal Shop in Salt Lake City. I know I have listeners in those markets in Pittsburgh and all those places. So please, you know, use some of your stimulus check or whatever it is that you have stashed away in your mattress and go out and start helping these people out. All right, while you're doing that, please support this podcast and check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/TwistedRico. You can reach out to me at TwistedRico@gmail.com. There's a Blowing Smoke with TR Instagram page, and that's exactly how you find it, at Blowing Smoke with TR. There's also Facebook and Twitter, and we're all over the place. And, you know, you can find us and reach out to me. A lot of people do, and I love hearing from people. I get a lot of messages whether they're emails or text messages or whatever from people that listen to the show. And I'm just going to keep doing this forever. This was show number 88, by the way. And I'm trying to plan something real fun for show 100. Because my original goal was to make it to 100. And we're going to make it. There's only like 11 to go after this one. And, you know, Nat Friedberg, you know, has a new band called Freeloader. And he was in the Upper Crust, the Titanics. And he's just been a Boston rock guy forever who's toured the world. And he's going to be on the show next week. So that's going to be a really fun thing. Curtis Casella from Tang Records is coming back because once was not enough with Curtis. Plus, he gave me a nice Tang sweatshirt. So that gets you extra points. Send the swag along. We'll promote you, man, if you send the swag. All right, so I want to thank our engineer at New Alliance East for doing a great job as usual, Nick Z. Until the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive, and yes, we love you, Busy Phillips. Cool. Keep it. We'll just stick it in there somewhere and figure it out later.